Yeah, so thank you for the introduction. My name is Bastian. I'm a PhD student in information security. And in my talk, I want to discuss ethical considerations in security research. So as we all know, in information security, it's sometimes great fun to sometimes think like the bad guys and find vulnerabilities that allow us to let the system behave in a way it wasn't intended to do, or extract data that wasn't intended to be revealed, and so on. And in fact, that's why we're here in Hamburg these days. But there is one question that arises. Is it our duty to think about ethics of our actions in information security research? And this year's Congress motto is "Not my department." That's from a satirical song on Wernher von Braun's attitude towards the consequences of his work for Nazi Germany. He built the V2 rocket, and it says, "Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department." And following this reasoning, we can discuss if it's our duty to evaluate the impact of our research. And I would say, yes, of course it is. And most other researchers do likewise and provide extensive sections on ethical considerations in their research, on their research in their papers. And I think this research has changed drastically in the last few years. So while in earlier days, works on information security looked at security threats in a theoretical way, these things have changed in recent time, and current researchers often validate their research by implementing an attack and testing it in the wild. And of course, then ethical implications in this, let's say, gray area of research are obvious. And while they're not as fundamental to humankind as, for example, in medical research or other issues in natural science, I still believe that there is a need to address these ethical questions. And there are several famous examples for papers in this gray area. So for example, there's a paper on Tor, shining light into dark places, understanding the Tor network. What they have done, they've analyzed Tor traffic and analyzed what kind of users are there, what kind of traffic, and so on. And the problem, Tor's purpose is anonymization. So Tor users are intentionally seeking for additional anonymity and additional privacy. So the question is it okay to then analyze exactly this traffic? And I think sometimes it's difficult to determine where to draw this line that should not be crossed. So the discerning factor between the white hats and the black hats. What can you expect from this talk now? So at first, I want to present some of the controversially discussed papers and their ethics considerations. So please note that all these papers got approvals from review boards at the universities, and they were published at large conferences. So I certainly don't want to pick at the authors, and I do not want to criticize them for their papers. They have all done phenomenal research. But their papers should just serve as examples for controversially discussed research. In the following, I want to propose four ethical principles that might help researchers to estimate the ethical impact of their work and compare them to the papers presented before. And for me, the aim of the talk is to make you think about research methods and its possible impact to others. And then maybe stimulate a discussion about research ethics in general in our community. And I don't have definite answers. And I strongly believe that there's still plenty of room for discussion. And at least in Europe, the whole situation is somewhat unsatisfying. So unlike in the US, where all the large universities have their IRBs, the institutional review boards, where researchers can check their research proposals before they do their work, we don't have them in Europe. And that's a problem, because large conferences, mostly in the US, often require exactly this IRB approval for acceptance of these papers in this gray area. So it's difficult for European universities to do research in exactly this area. So let's begin with a short presentation of these controversially discussed papers. The first one I want to discuss is Spamalytics. an empirical analysis of spam marketed conversion. So the idea of this research is very easy to explain. The researchers have broken into a spam sending botnet and analyzed it and then manipulated some of the messages in a way that the receiver's actions, such as clicking on these spam links and buying some stuff, is trackable for the researchers. That's, of course, fascinating research and very interesting results, no question. But is this ethical research? And we'll now have a look at the authors' arguments. So they said, we're just passive actors. So we ensure neutral actions. And each user should never be worse off due to their activities. So they just observed everything, what happens on the server, manipulated some messages, and when they were manipulated, then the user wasn't worse off because they removed the links to the spam buying websites and had their own website where they told the user that this is a spam message. So that sounds fair, right? Next one is your botnet is my botnet, analysis of a botnet takeover. So it's a fascinating story about a botnet that was overtaken by researchers for analysis purposes. And of course, the authors had to deal with the ethical questions, such as if it's unethical to break into a botnet. And they argued like this. So they operated the botnet they have overtaken in such a way that the harm to the user, to the victims, will be minimized. And they collected enough information to later enable a notification of affected users. So they wanted to inform users afterwards. So they minimized harm, they informed the owners of infected machines afterwards, so seems ethical. Next one is PharmaLeaks. It's quite new, it's from summer 2012. It analyzed the underground economics of affiliate networks for pharma products on the web with the help of leaked data. So this leak was in form of database dumps that were mainly driven by a competition of criminal organizations. So there were two different affiliate networks for pharma products, and one hacked the other and released a database dump with all the information. And yeah, it was leaked to the public, and the researchers took this data and analyzed how these affiliate networks work. And yeah, the researchers had an ethics section in their paper, and they knew that the data was gathered by illegal means, and so they justified their research with reasoning about harm. So they said, at the time of research, all the data was already in the wild. So in fact, they couldn't create any new harm because everything was known before. And the last paper I want to present, is the internet for porn? Well, at least this guy thinks to know the answer, the tracking monster. This paper analyzes the economics behind traffic trading networks for porn websites. And the authors even actively participated in this business by setting up their own website and earned money with their website. So they had a section about ethics. And let's see the arguments. They said, clearly, the question arises if it's ethical to participate in this traffic trading. And we believe that realistic experiments are the only way to estimate the success rate. And then they said we didn't withdraw any funds of the trading account, so they didn't take the money they earned from the website. They were pretty successful, by the way. So up to now, we have seen recent publications and the authors' arguments on why they think their research is ethical. And I now want to discuss some fundamental ethical principles and compare them to the introduced papers and their arguments on research ethics. So a seemingly straightforward principle is that researchers should not actively harm others. So for example, writing your own malware and testing it in the wild is obviously a bad idea. But let's first have a look at another science area with a long history of research ethics, medical research. What you can see in this slide is a picture from one of the most important cases of ethics in medical science. It's a so-called Tuskegee syphilis experiment. It started in 1932 and aimed at analyzing the spread and the possible treatments for syphilis. And in 1947, penicillin was found to be a very effective treatment for syphilis. But nevertheless, this experiment continued for over 25 years after it shut down in the early 70s. And during these 40 years of runtime, patients were not informed about available treatments, and no precautions were taken that patients do not infect others. And they were also actively given false information regarding the treatment. And today it's obvious that such a study is unethical. So doctors are not only not allowed to withhold information about effective treatments, but they also have to explain patients about the study design. So today, lines that should not be crossed in medical research are well defined, and possible impact of unethical research is known in detail through a large number of research scandals. So medical research directly affects human lives. But what about our field? What could possibly go wrong in information security research? Well, I believe that the differences to medical research are quite obvious. Our research, if performed unethically, can still have a dramatic impact on the involved people. I have an example. It's not quite academic, but still it shows, or it can show, the impact of unethical studies in a very drastic way. And that's the Craigslist experiment. It was a hoax ad on Craigslist, was posted by someone under the name of a woman. It was sexually very explicit, and well, more than 100 men responded, not only by their names, but they sent pictures, sent their mail addresses, even corporate mail addresses, phone numbers, and everything. And the guy who set up this ad just collected everything and put it on his blog, and said, hey, people trust each other on Craigslist. And that's a very interesting result. And of course, the results are immense. So there were divorces, there were firings, there were lawsuits, and so on. So as you can see, it can still have a dramatic impact on involved people's life if we do our research in an unethical way. The second principle is do not watch bad things happening. So in real life, there's even the term non-assistant of a person in danger. So for instance, if you witness a car accident and with injured people, then you have the legal obligation to give first aid. And at first glance, it seems as obvious as do not harm users actively. So to do not watch bad things happening. But let's have a look at two of the previously introduced papers. So there was the Spamalytics paper. They were breaking into a spam sending botnet and analyzed what's happened there. So they said, yeah, we were just passive actors. But passive actors, in the end, means watching without helping. So the authors argued that they manipulated some of the spam messages and that they have done good things, so that no one is worse off than without their research. However, the researchers did not prevent that still millions of spam messages are sent over the botnet. And they knew which computers were infected, and they simply watched and informed people afterwards. So in a real-life analogy, it would be like you're a researcher and want to analyze the illegal activities street. So you're sitting in some back street and observing muggers without calling the police. Just want to analyze what they steal and so on. The other paper was the other botnet paper where they broke into a botnet and analyzed what types of data this botnet steals and so on. And they said, yeah, they minimized the damage to the users. But I think it's difficult to define minimizing damage. So ultimately, it would mean that no research is possible, because the authors would have taken actions to shut down the botnets once they got access to it. But of course, they wanted to do research, so they analyzed the botnet, and afterwards users were informed. But I don't think that's minimizing the damage. Next one is, do not perform illegal activities to harm illegal activities. Or in other words, is being unethical to the unethical unethical? So again, have a look at the botnet paper, where they were breaking into botnet and analyzing everything. Consider some legal botnet, for example, SETI at home. So they were doing good things, searching for extraterrestrial life. And breaking into a legal botnet, like SETI at home, would be unethical, right? But does this feeling change if the botnet is malicious? So I think that's a tricky question. And think of a real-life analogy. So breaking into a thief's house to just analyze which goods has been stolen is probably a very bad excuse for a researcher when arrested by the police. So for everyone, it's clear that this would be illegal and unethical. But for the botnet, I think it's difficult. It's a tricky question. Even no argument of self-defense can be made in the case of the botnet. So they actively were broken into this botnet and analyzed it. They weren't victims of this botnet. The other paper is I want to discuss is the PharmaLeaks paper. So where they analyzed the database dump that was leaked. And they say, okay, it was already in the wild, and consequently, we can't create any new harm because everything was known before. And that's a classical statement of defense. So we can use illegal data because others have done it as well. Or in other words, I was just following the rest of the group. Or Alice and Bob got caught doing the same thing and nothing happened to them, so it's okay to also do this. The problem is, does this really make your research ethical or more ethical? So if something is wrong and you know it is wrong, is everyone does it this way ever a relevant defense for these actions? I don't think so. And the last principle I want to discuss is do not conduct undercover research. Question why? Problem is, for normal undercover work, you need cooperation with law enforcement. So law enforcement has clear rules defining which actions in undercover work are permitted and which are not. And for some investigations, you need the cooperation with the law enforcement. So for instance, if you want to become a member of a group of criminals, you often have some form of joining ritual. So where you have to commit some crime to prove your ability. And this can only be done by undercover worker if they have the cooperation with law enforcement that allows them to do such things. And in research, it's difficult. So you can't, for example, if you're a researcher and want to try to understand the market mechanisms of local drug dealing, you can't just go out and simply sell drugs at different prices and different quality and then figure out price elasticity, for example, or ways to disturb this illegal market. Besides the risk of being shot by some other drug dealers, of course, it would be illegal to do so. And similar to testing illegal drug markets would be, for example, buying a botnet or buying stolen credit cards. And this might have to be at least considered as unethical since bad guys receive money from you with your research. And that's exactly the same in this paper where they analyzed this traffic trading for porn websites. So their argument is that we believe that realistic experiments are only the only way to estimate the success rates of attacks in the real world. So they said, yeah, we had to do it in that way. But this reasoning doesn't solve the actual problem of unethical research. So we had to do it in this way. That's not true. So nobody forces you to perform some specific research experiment. You can also always do some other research. with maybe other results or results in lower quality, but still you can do some other research. So the introduced paper clearly is undercover work and could lead to problematic situations regarding ethics. For example, they made a lot of money with this website, and then there was this question if they can take this money if they should leave this money with the bad guys that provide these trading websites. So to conclude this, I think most papers dealing with a large amount of user data and breaking into systems and so on include sections about ethics. And at least in the US, universities have review boards for researchers where they can have their proposals checked before their work. Well, in Europe, it's a totally different situation. So I believe that the community is well aware of the ethical questions within their field. However, as we've seen in this talk, I think it's very, very difficult to fulfill even the most fundamental ethical principles. And the reasons are diverse. So for example, there's this gap between what is possible, we all know nearly everything, and what is acceptable. And that makes it very difficult to find the right place where to draw this line that should not be crossed in ethical research. And another problem are the unpredictable effects of the analyzed systems. So remember the botnet paper? So they were breaking into the command and control server. And this is a complex system, and in most cases, of course, undocumented. So it's difficult to calculate the impact of your actions that then later could harm users, even if you didn't intend to do so. And even if you're a passive observer, then you always have the problem of watching without helping, so that you have the possibility to do something, and you don't do it because you want to do the research. So I believe that these questions will be continued to be discussed in the future, and hopefully will lead to some similar ethical standards as we have in natural sciences, and some more review boards and some of these constitutions in Europe. So thank you for your attention.
So if you have questions, there are two mics in the aisles. Please line up here.
Could it be that the classical ethics is dead? Why? Because in classical ethics, like, you know, categoric imperative and so on, me, it is us. I am the part of the whole humanity, okay? Mm-hmm. So I should not harm the humanity. Currently, we have two situations. First, the world is overcrowded already. Aren't you ashamed to get your salary? Because somebody in Africa is not getting even this. Is he us or others? I don't know. Then again, the complexity. What it means? If the systems are complex and you want to investigate them, is it at all possible to do it in an ethical way? If you want to get know how, for example, Facebook tracing cookies work, then it's not you, it's another subject, another actor with his own will, and his interest is that you don't know it. He will cover it, will cooperate with something else, so basically excluding the very legal possibility for you to investigate this. So my question actually is that in our time with a plurality of actors and everybody has its own will, is it possible that the classical ethics is dead? Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's very, very difficult to find all the impact of your work. And you can't see all the things you're doing and all the side effects of your work. But I think it still not leaves you with the question of if it's ethical to do so. You You don't have to do the research if you're unsure about the ethical implications.
Okay, we have 3 minutes left, so please stay focused over there.
What do you think about the ethics of responsible releasing of vulnerabilities? For example, we had a SCADA talk here with a guideline which is dual use on pen testing. Yeah. Special plans, or we had talks about anti-forensics defeating Windows forensics. Does the harm principle help, or what kind of principle could help there? Thanks.
I think the rules there are quite clear. So, for example, that you give the vendor 3 months of time for fixing this, and then it will be published to make pressure on the vendor.
Doesn't help with the power plant.
Yeah.
Okay, 2 questions from the internet.
All right. The first question from the internet is as follows. Why trying to develop new ethical rules when you could probably use ethical rules from other science disciplines like medical research?
Yeah, we have to take it. We have done this before. And not everything from medical research fits in our area. I think the first step is to analyze what is needed, and then we can reuse things from other areas. And do not harm users actively or persons actively is valid in every other research area as well, of course.
Okay, and the second question, thank you for your insightful talk, in which you presented a lot of lines that should not be crossed. However, I wonder why they should not be crossed. In short, which ethical framework do you use to decide the ethical questions of your talk?
The ethical, this, of, could you repeat this? The ethical questions, yes. Of the principles or?
In short, which ethical framework do you use to decide the ethical questions of your talk?
This ethical question. I have to admit that's a tricky question. And I would say these principles I discussed come from other research areas, for example, the medical research.
Okay, all right.
Hello, I will make it brief. You talked about the research activities and ethics issues. What about the results?
About publishing results?
You research something that is definitely will be used for something that will restrain the rights of the human beings.
I think that's the same. Same with the, I discussed the results with the papers. So I don't know all the research results from these papers because I only can read the results, the actual paper.
No, but you talked about ethical questions within the phase.
Yeah, but
within
the results, I can only read the paper, and see what they have done, and that's the thing that makes the impact.
Okay, Aleph.
Don't you think it's a little bit short-sighted and counterproductive to be blaming thousands of researchers instead of blaming the people who are creating insecure systems in the first place?
No, I don't think so. Of course, you can. We as a research community, we have to show the problems in the systems and insecure systems. But I think we can also discuss if it's ethical to do this research and to release these results. It's another question.
Okay, on the right.
This is more like a comment. Somebody over here was asking which ethical framework you use to determine the questions in your talk.
Yeah.
And I recommend for a follow-up talk you go and perhaps consult the Stanford Library of Philosophy. It has you know this.
Yeah.
You're familiar with it. Okay. So there's multiple objectives. There's multiple objectives that ethics can follow, and I think listing them and being explicit about which one you're following would be helpful.
Okay, thank you.
Do you actually think it makes a difference whether the results of such research could be used to improve the situation? Do you think it makes a difference to say, well, it's okay if you can do it for doing anything better in the future?
It depends on how these results are published. So if you give, for example, if you find some vulnerabilities in the system and you give the vendor time to fix this and publish it afterwards, then I think it's okay. Then you improve the whole situation with the system, mm-hmm. and no new harm is made.
Yeah, but if I'm coming back to your example of the bot, of taking over a botnet, for example, does it make the situation better if the results from this research can be used to prevent illegal botnets, or I don't know?
Can they?
Probably
I don't think so.
But yeah.
It was just an analysis how this undercover economy works, but mm-hmm. it won't prevent any new botnet.
Or maybe make life harder for botnet owners. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm. I doubt it, but yeah.
Okay, thank you, Sebastian, and thank you for your attention.